In keeping with CBS News' policy of offering diverse opinions on matters of public interest, we now will present other viewpoints related to the president's Central American policy. Offering the official Democratic Party response is Senator Christopher Dodd of Connecticut, a member of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Good evening. I want to thank the networks for the opportunity to offer a different viewpoint. While there is no unanimity in Congress on either side of the aisle on Central America, tonight I'm speaking for the many Americans who are concerned about our ever-deepening involvement in the military conflict in that part of the world. I'm pleased to note that the President this evening was willing to recognize an economic and political dimension to the problems in Central America, including the possibility of negotiations. Concerned members of Congress have been pressing this point ever since the President came to office. Regrettably, however, as his statement tonight demonstrates, the fundamental view continues to emphasize military problems and the search for military solutions. In the months and years that follow this evening, after the applause has faded and the ringing phrases are forgotten, Americans will have to live with the choices we make in this fateful time of decision. In the past, we as a nation have learned painfully that the truth is never as simple as some would paint it. Charts and statistics can be used or misused to prove any side of a case, and speeches can sound very good without being very right. So first of all, let me state clearly that on some very important things, all Americans stand in agreement. We will oppose the establishment of Marxist states in Central America. We will not accept the creation of Soviet military bases in Central America. And we will not tolerate the placement of Soviet offensive missiles in Central America or anywhere in this hemisphere. Finally, we are fully prepared to defend our security and the security of the Americas, if necessary, by military means. All patriotic Americans share these goals. But many of us in Congress, Democrats and Republicans, disagree with the President because we believe the means he has chosen will not fulfill them. Those of us who oppose the President's policy believe that he is mistaken in critical ways. To begin with, we believe the administration fundamentally misunderstands the causes of conflict in Central America. We cannot afford to found so important a policy on ignorance. And the painful truth is that many of our highest officials seem to know as little about Central America in 1983 as we knew about Indochina in 1963. I've lived with the people in this region. Let me share some facts with you about Central America. Most of the people there are appallingly poor. They can't afford to feed their families when they're hungry. They can't find a doctor for them when they're sick. They live in rural shacks with dirt floors or city slums without plumbing or clean water. The majority can't read or write, and many of them can't even count. It takes all five Spanish-speaking countries of Central America more than a year to provide what this nation does, or produce what this nation does, in less than 3 days. Virtually none of even that meager amount ever reaches the bulk of the people. In short, a very few live in isolated splendor, while the very many suffer in shantytown squalor. In country after country, dictatorship or military dominance has stifled democracy and destroyed human rights. If Central America were not racked with poverty, there would be no revolution. If Central America were not racked with hunger, there would be no revolution. If Central America were not racked with injustice, there would be no revolution. In short, there would be nothing for the Soviets to exploit. But unless those oppressive conditions change, the region will continue to seethe with revolution, with or without the Soviets. Instead of trying to do something about the factions or factors which breed revolution, this administration has turned to massive military buildup at a cost of hundreds of millions of dollars. Its policy is ever-increasing military assistance, endless military training, and further military involvement. This is a formula for failure, and it is a proven prescription for picking a loser. The American people know that we have been down this road before, and that it only leads to a dark tunnel of endless intervention. Tonight, the President himself told us that things are not going well in Central America. But for this, the President cannot blame Congress. We have given him what he has asked for. $700 million in economic and military assistance has been delivered or is on its way to El Salvador since Ronald Reagan came to office, all at his request and all with congressional approval. One of every five Salvadoran soldiers fighting for its government was trained right here in the United States. American soldiers are there now training Salvadoran army units, which are employing modern weapons built in American factories. Now the president asks for an even greater commitment. His request for El Salvador alone will bring the total aid to that country during his term to more than $1 billion. $1 billion to counter a rebel army that, according to all reports, does not exceed 7,000 guerrillas. That means you and I are paying $140,000 in hard-earned tax dollars for each one of those guerrillas we are trying to defeat. While your tax dollars have been pouring into El Salvador, the money skimmed off by that nation's very rich is leaving the country. For every dollar we've sent in, more than a dollar has gone out to numbered accounts in Zurich or to buy stocks on Wall Street. It raises the question of why we should invest in the future of El Salvador when the wealthiest citizens of that country are investing in Swiss banks. What return have we received for all we have spent? The army in El Salvador has been reluctant to fight and is led by an officer corps working a 9-to-5 shift with weekends off. Land reform has been abandoned. At least 30,000 civilians have been killed, and the majority of them have been victims of the government's own security forces. American nuns and labor advisors have been murdered, and the judicial system is so intimidated that it cannot even bring accused murderers to trial. For those 30,000 murderers, confirmed by our own embassy, there have been fewer than 200 convictions. American dollars alone cannot buy a military victory. That is the lesson of the painful past and of this newest conflict in Central America. If we continue down that road, if we continue to ally ourselves with repression, we will not only deny our own basic values, we will also find ourselves once again on the losing side. It is folly, pure and simple, to pursue a course which is wrong in principle in order to wage a conflict which cannot be won. After 30,000 deaths, after hundreds of millions of dollars, with the ante going up, with no end in sight, with no hope for any change, real change, the time has come for a different approach. Yes, we are fully prepared to be involved in Central America. But the question is the nature and the quality of our involvement. We must offer an alternative policy that can work. First, we should use the power and influence of the United States to achieve an immediate cessation of hostilities in both El Salvador and Nicaragua. Already in both countries, too many people have died. It is time for the killing to stop. Second, the United States should use all its power and influence to work for a negotiated political settlement in Central America. In El Salvador, the rebels have offered to negotiate unconditionally. Let's test their sincerity. We certainly have the leverage to move the government to the bargaining table. On his recent trip in that very Catholic region, the Pope lent the moral force of his office to such a step. It is practical and realistic to expect that if we support it, these talks can get underway. And every major ally of ours in the region, Mexico, Panama, Venezuela, and Colombia, is anxious for such a step to be taken and has offered, I might add, to make the arrangements. Those same nations have volunteered to bring Nicaragua into negotiations, and Nicaragua has agreed to talk. Instead, as we know from the present press accounts, this administration is conducting a not-so-secret war inside that country. No one in this Congress or this country is under the delusion that the Sandinista government is a model democracy or a force for stability. But the insurgents we have supported are the remnants of the old Somoza regime, a regime whose corruption, graft, torture, and despotism made it universally despised in Nicaragua. The Sandinistas may not be winners, but right now we are backing sure losers. We are doing for the Sandinista Marxists what they could not do for themselves. We are weakening the very groups inside Nicaragua which believe in a free and democratic society. And that is the sad irony of this administration's policy. Third, we must restore America's role as a source of hope and a force for progress in Central America. We must help governments only if they'll help their own people. We must hear the cry for bread and schools, work and opportunity that comes from campesinos everywhere in this hemisphere. We must make violent revolution preventable by making peaceful revolution possible. Most important, this approach would permit the United States to move with the tide of history rather than stand against it. For us, the stakes are diplomatic, political, and strategic. but for the people of El Salvador. Life itself is on the line. I've been to that country, and I know about the morticians who travel the streets each morning to collect the bodies of those summarily dispatched the night before by Salvadoran security forces, gangland style. The victim of a person on a bended knee, thumbs wired behind their back, a bullet through the brain. We recoil at such an image, for our association with criminals such as these is not America's tradition. In other brighter days, we have stood for the aspirations of all of the people who are a part of the Americas. Two centuries ago, our nation raised the light of liberty before the world, and all of this hemisphere looked to us as an example and an inspiration. In this Capitol building from which I speak tonight, men like Daniel Webster, Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, once spoke of an America leading the world for progress and human rights. And people everywhere listened with hope to those words. There is no greater or larger ideal than the one which was forged here in the early days of this republic. That ideal of liberty is our greatest strength as a nation. It is a powerful and peaceful weapon against tyranny of any kind, anywhere in this hemisphere. We can take the road of military escalation. But what we really don't know what the next step will be, where it will lead, or how much it will cost. This much, however, we do know. It'll mean greater violence. It'll mean greater bloodshed. It'll mean greater hostilities. And inevitably, the day will come when it will mean a regional conflict in Central America. When that day comes, when the dogs of war are loose in Central America, when the cheering has stopped, we will know where the president's appeal for more American money and a deeper American commitment has taken us. Thank you, and good night.